Blog Talk Radio.
Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Monday, September the 20th, as we like to do on Mondays. We'll be chatting with our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Lots to get into today. It's one of those days where my agenda is full, so let me say hello to our friend Bill Katz. How are you, Bill?
Reasonably well, Silvio, reasonably well, given the news and everything happening around us, but I look outside. And the sun is bright, the sky is blue. Now, Al Gore says the sky by this afternoon will be gray. And he knows. He knows all about that.
Well, he's been making so many good predictions here for the last 20 years that all his predictions have come true. So how can we doubt anything he says? Well, let me tell you, here in the Dallas area, it is sunny. It is a blue sky. It looks real pretty. But it's supposed to be 101 today because summer seems to be interested in doing one more summer day. And then tomorrow it's going to drop into the 80s. So I guess fall will begin tomorrow. But this is the last day of summer, Bill. And maybe Al Gore will be seen around here reminding us that the earth is getting warmer, Bill. He's going to come down here and say, well, I told you that it was going to get warmer. You didn't buy my book.
That's right. There's no question, whatever, that the heat wave that you're having down there is due to the fact that I have a Honda. That is, my personal belief
right.
is that it's true, and that I really should watch myself and atone for this in some way.
Right. No, you're right. What a crazy. Well, I've got to begin. You know, we have so many crazy stories to talk about today, and so many things that maybe are not that much fun. But I got to start with a couple of quick things. Happy number 87 to Sophia Loren. And I think every kid, I remember staying up till like 2 o'clock in the morning to watch her movies with Marcello Mastroianni.
Yes.
So she was an unbelievably beautiful woman. Now, I have not seen her recently, but I wouldn't be surprised if she looks as beautiful as ever, Bill.
Well, she probably does. She aged very gracefully and always had a great deal of class. She may not have been the greatest actress of all time,
no.
but she had tremendous style,
yeah.
And I always liked Sophia Loren, her background, her history. I think she is a role model for women who think that they inevitably will get less attractive as they get older. That's not necessarily true at all, but she proved it.
Well, it seems to me, Bill, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't know every one of her movies. I've seen, quite a few of them, but it seems like she always knew what role to play as she got older.
Yes.
You know, when she was 20 years old, obviously everybody wanted to see as much of her as possible, you know.
Yes.
You know, as much of, you know, this is a PG show, so I can't quite tell
want
to say, but let's just say people wanted to see her natural things as much as possible.
Yes.
But as she got older, it seems she understood that the being elegant at 45 was different than at 25. I mean, I get that impression.
That's
I'm
true.
Not an expert on her movies,
yes.
but I kind of get that impression, Bill.
I think it's very, very true. You know, it's very easy to underestimate quote, glamour girls. Very,
mm-hmm.
very easy. I was in show business for a while. It's a Tonight Show. You take a woman like Gina Lollobrigida, who was regarded as one of the, quote, hot Italian numbers of the 1960s and 1970s, maybe a little earlier than that. She has become a very distinguished photojournalist in Europe.
Mm.
And
wow.
She was also a sculptress before she went into the movies. And because basically, frankly, because of her looks, she mm-hmm. became something of a smash. That flowing red hair, the Life mm-hmm. magazine cover. But as the parts went away because as she got older, she became a distinguished artist, a photojournalist, and she has mm-hmm. exhibits. Is very well respected. And is a highly intelligent woman. I think she's in her 90s now. But people tend to think that it's an old stereotype, if you are glamorous or beautiful, that you can't possibly be anything else. And many, many women have shown that to be untrue.
Yeah, no, I thought she was beautiful. Gina, and then there was also Claudia Cardinale, who was the other big Italian lady of that time. And, of course, Sophia Loren, more or less at the top of the list. But happy number 86. I think she lives in Italy, Sophia Loren. I don't think she lives in the United States. But anyway, I don't know that for sure. But I know she comes to New York a lot. That much I do know.
Yes.
She travels to New York a lot. She must, have business there or whatever. The other quick question I wanted to ask you, Bill, kind of ties into a topic today, is I didn't see you marching on Saturday afternoon. I kept looking on the TV and say, I got to see if Bill is here. But it looks like there were more journalists and police officers than marchers, Bill.
Yes, and more lobbyists. There are more lobbyists. I did not go because I felt that the millions of people who came would envelop me, and that I would not have any sense of independence, and I would be pushed toward the Capitol, where there would be another revolution with cannons and tanks. So I didn't go, but I thought the whole thing was such a farce. I mean, this build up to nothing. As you said, there were more police and reporters there than there were demonstrators. They were completely peaceful. And once again, we've been misled by the press into thinking mm-hmm. that something was going to happen that didn't happen. And I wish they would stop doing it. I really do. They're just destroying their credibility day by day.
Yeah. Hopefully this is the end of the January 6th conversation. Hopefully this is the end of it. Plus, apparently there's a report from the FBI. Reuters had something on the that the FBI is going to come out saying that there really wasn't any organization or conspiracy. What we saw was just a couple of hundred idiots who saw an opportunity to break into the Capitol. The Capitol was not protected. And that, to me, in retrospect, that's the story of January 6th. How is the Capitol of the United States not protected when there are thousands of people in the streets? Obviously, Speaker Pelosi doesn't want to talk about that, but I think a lot of Americans, I look at some of the polling data, and a lot of Americans are asking that question, Bill.
Well, I certainly think they should. I mean, how many times have you heard the word insurrection mentioned?
Gosh, yes.
I mean, I think it was originated by CNN, who saw an opportunity to be CNN and to even destroy its credibility further. Right on January 6th, this is the United States of America. On January 6th, 2021, an insurrection, an attempted takeover. There was never any attempt to take over. And if people are going to stage an insurrection, it's usually organized. I mean, I doubt if they went to Washington and said, there must be a lot of people who think like me. And usually people would come with weapons and explosives and all kinds of things. There was none of that. There may be a few idiots who tried to climb a fence.
Right.
But you always find a few. We've had people trying to climb the White House fence.
Sure.
And you know, we don't claim that the country is falling apart. This was a press disgrace, and it was a disgrace by Nancy Pelosi and all the others who claimed that there was an insurrection. I don't think it will end, by the way, because there are too many true believers out there who will try to force the issue. And once again, just like they're like the conspiracy theorists that they are, they will try to find some other way to prove the conspiracy.
Yeah, well, I think you're probably right. There are always going to be true believers. I just don't know if there are as many people interested in the insurrection talk. That's the part that I don't know. But I was so disappointed that I didn't see you, because I figured if if anybody was going to go back for the, if anybody was going to be there at the second insurrection, I thought it would be Bill Katz.
Well, yes, but you know, there were always problems with these things. One of the problems I had was that I couldn't get my tank through a toll booth. I mean, they didn't know what the toll to charge me. And so I had to go back. It was a very, very bad situation.
Yeah, it's kind of tough to get a tank through the New Jersey Turnpike, isn't it?
Very, very, very difficult. They haven't gotten the cards made up yet for what tolls to charge and how many shells you're allowed to have. So it was bad. But you want to know something. If Biden becomes any more unpopular, the next time people talk about an insurrection on television, a lot of Americans are going to say, I wish it had succeeded. You know?
Yes, right. Well, he is a man in trouble, a politician in trouble, I should say.
Substantial trouble, yeah.
I wanted to bring this up, Bill, because I was doing a little baseball research. I do stuff like that, you know. I look up research, baseball research, and I went back to 1979. At this time in 1979, I wanted to see what the standings were. And so I had to get into a few newspapers. And I was amazed at how similar the front page or the headlines of September 1979 are to the headlines that we have now. Inflation, gasoline prices, Middle East concerns, a president who seems overwhelmed. And it just seems like concerns with the Allies. My gosh, I felt like I was reading, you know, September 2021. It is just remarkable to me. Now, at least back then, President Carter was putting in a full day. You know, he wasn't going back to Plains, Georgia every Friday afternoon at 2 o'clock. But, man, how similar
that's right.
It was, Bill.
That's true. If you go back to that period and realize how badly Carter was doing. I mean, he came into office as this kind of strange character, nothing governor from the South who really not very many people had heard of outside his hometown, maybe not even outside his house. He had served a term as governor of Georgia. His lieutenant governor was a racist, and he never denounced him. That was something that the press managed to avoid. And he gave the famous Malaise speech from the White House when he finally had to say something about the fact that the national morale was so low. And he looked like Mr. Rogers sitting there with an oversized tie talking about the great national malaise. Well, you know, that would be like Franklin Roosevelt saying, I don't know why you people are so unhappy. admitting that he was a poor leader, he was a poor leader. And the word was out that there was a big movement to nominate Reagan in 1980 in the Republican Party. And I think he probably felt, no matter what I do, I'm going to be president for another 5 years. Because no one's going to vote for Reagan. I mean, a movie actor. And they got quite surprised. They got quite surprised. I think one of the big – go ahead.
Sure.
Go
no,
ahead.
Go ahead. No, I was going to say that the reason, of course, that people voted President Carter out is because there was such a sense of incompetence, which is somewhat similar to, unfortunately, the fellow now. When you look at the stuff happening, you were going to say something. Go ahead and finish your thought. I wanted to talk about the border, but go ahead and finish the thought you had a minute ago.
The only thought I had was that both Carter and Biden tended toward either favoring or accepting a weak country. And I think people who are being led sense that. They sense weakness in their leaders, and they never like it.
Yes. And I remember the Malaise speech. He looked so weak in that speech. I've gone back and I've watched the replay of it. It was an awful speech. It's hard to believe that his advisors allowed him to do that. You would think that there are advisors around a president who would say, no, I'm sorry, that's really stupid. Don't do that. You're going to hurt yourself. But he went ahead and did it, I guess, sort of similar to Biden in Afghanistan. I mean, from what I understand, most of the people were saying, Mr. President, don't do it that way. Don't close that base. But he went ahead and did it.
Well, you would think even now with the with the incident that occurred in Afghanistan, a tragic incident in which we killed 10 people, the White House would come out with – he would personally come out and make a heartfelt statement saying that, you know, when something like this happens, the whole country grieves because that is not who we are. That's not the kind of country we're – nothing. I mean, basically just, well, these things, you know, we're sorry, but these things happen. And especially when you realize – that the purpose of that raid was clearly to help him politically at home.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that they really believed there was any great threat. They wanted to help. He had to be helped politically at home. And it is amazing, isn't it, how silent the usual human rights experts are and human rights racketeers. I mean, they're not going to say a word. Why? Because it's Joe, and he's surrounded by Obama's people, so they're okay. And as far as Kamala Harris, I mean, I don't know if she made a statement at all. We know that she went to the border for a few minutes and then went to a football game. These people have absolutely no common sense as to how to conduct themselves in public.
Yeah, and that really surprises me a little bit because we were told they were the smart people. I mean, we were told that, you know, that Trump was this idiot who's a total incompetent idiot, but you had to bring in the smart people. You know, the smart people were coming in. It's turning out to be – I don't think, Bill, I'm not sure if Donald Trump is going to run for president. I really don't know. But if he is, he couldn't have written a better script. I mean, if somebody had said, Bill Katz, here's $100,000, write a book about how – Donald Trump returns to the White House. You could not have written a better book than the first 8 months of the Biden presidency, Bill.
Absolutely. I mean, and I think that he is hinting that he will run. I think his hints are all in one direction. However, it's also been said, and again, I don't know what's in his mind, that he will wait until after the 2022 election to see what kind of shape the Republican Party is in. The one thing he fears, obviously, as anyone would in his position, is running and losing.
Right.
Then he would be marked forever as the person who damaged the Republican Party, lost two presidential elections. And I don't think he wants to go down with that. I think he would rather retire than run a losing race. He would have to have almost a guarantee that he would win in 2024. And I don't know who can give him that guarantee.
Right.
I really
don't. The other thing is that I'll get to the border in a minute, but the other thing that I believe President Trump needs to understand, or people around him need to tell him, is that if you want to get the Democrat vote out, you talk about Trump. And we saw that a little bit in California, I think.
Yes.
Where he never had it. Look, for a month and a half, Newsom was going to win or survive the recall. But there's no question that talking about Trump energizes Democrats. And right now, I don't think Democrats are very energized. So I hope they stay home in 2022 because
true.
I think many of them will. So that's the thing. That to me is the question mark that I have around President Trump running again. I know that there's a lot of people who love him, and I respect his performance. I think he did a great job as president, actually. If you just look at the results, if you put the tweets away and his personality away and just look at the results, he did a very good job, I think.
Absolutely.
But it's that personality that comes with it.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Reagan was helped enormously by his personality.
Absolutely.
People loved him.
And I think that it reminds me of the story. I had a friend one time who told me about his uncle and how everybody loved his uncle, but nobody wanted to invite him to a party because every time he went to a party, the uncle would drive everybody crazy and people would leave early.
Yes.
And I sometimes think that...
Well, that's the danger. You know, there is an old saying in politics that a presidential candidate is at the height of his popularity the day before he announces his candidacy.
Right.
As soon as you announce your candidacy, all the guns turn on you. Then suddenly people take it seriously, and all the Democrats will have to do is run the old tapes of the bad Donald Trump, the vicious attacks on people, and say, do you really want four more years of this? And it will be easy to convince some to avoid the issues and go down with the sinking ship rather than have to be a cabin mate of Donald Trump. That's what I'm afraid of, that he's going to misread the polls and think that he's already in, when in fact it will be an absolutely brutal campaign no matter who runs. Biden, I can't conceive of Biden running again. I mean, the man is, first of all, so impaired that and those things never go in the other direction, that I think he, you know, there may be the usual committee that goes to him and says, Mr. President, you really should resign or retire, rather. We don't think you can be reelected. Then the question would be, who becomes the candidate? Now, Kamala Harris is so unqualified, she's beyond unqualified, but she checks off two boxes. She's a female and she is a person of color. And in the Democratic Party today, that's what counts. You've got to check off those boxes. The Democratic Party could be, you know, if it loses badly last year, and that's not guaranteed, but if it loses badly, they can be in a lot of trouble as a party, because that party is, they talk about the country not being united. That party is not united at all. I mean, we have right here in New York a ridiculous situation. We have right now a ridiculous situation that would make a good comedy or a political comedy. The Attorney General of New York State, one Letitia James, who investigated the governor, Andrew Cuomo, and really brought him down, she is the one who did it, is now considering a run for his position, for his job, governor, even though the incumbent lieutenant governor is also a Democrat. You would think she'd want to give her all the support she can. Now here is where the catch comes. Letitia James is African American. The incumbent governor is a white woman. And if Letitia James runs, she would have to primary the current governor. It's going to turn into a racial contest, an ugly racial contest, and that is something we don't need. We really don't.
No, we don't, but that's unfortunately where that party is, and it may take a total blow-up of the party for it to come back to its senses. And if I was a moderate Democrat, you know, the ones that we used to have lots of those at one time, I might be willing to blow up the party just so that we can put the pieces back together, because the party right now is going in a direction that is going to – it's not good for the country, but it's not good for the party either. And it's crazy. Well, let's talk about the border for a second, but I'm going to take a little break, and then we'll be back and continue chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. Just another reminder that the music that we play in the podcast is the music of my good friend Carlos Guedes. He plays around town and has recorded a couple of CDs, and I have a link to his website if you want to check him out. Great music, original music, too, from my friend Carlos, who's originally from Venezuela. He and his wife Luisa are big believers in the freedom movement in Venezuela. Let's get back to our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Bill, I know how we feel about the border here, because the border, in my case, it's 450 miles away from where I'm doing the show right now. You're further away from it. So how does it look to you guys in New York to see 14,000 Haitians under a bridge? Does it look as crazy to you as it does to us?
You know, it's very interesting. I suspect a lot of people in New York talk about the border privately. But there is very little public discussion here, maybe in the few conservative outlets like the New York Post. But it's very far away. New Yorkers like to sound very liberal. It's very much an immigrant state. So you don't have that feeling of impact that you would have in Texas. I don't know of any polls that are taken in New York thus far about the border crisis. I do know that the former governor, Andrew Cuomo, who I don't know where he is right now. I think he's with Kamala Harris on a milk carton, you know, fighting for space. But I think he once made a statement that they're all welcome here, which is the kind of statement Democratic governors kind of make routinely. But I can't really say that I can read New York on this.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you what the Democrats on the border are saying. They're not very happy with this because most of those towns on the border are small towns run by Democrat mayors and city councils. And they are furious about this. I mean, because these...
Oh, of course.
I mean, these immigrants from wherever they come from, it doesn't really matter where they come from. You know, they're creating all kinds of issues with infrastructure and resources on the border, chaos.
And health.
And health. Well, that's another issue. Nobody wants to talk about
it.
They call you...
They're not vaccinated.
Well, that's it. I mean, they call you a racist if you ask this question, but why is it what is so unfair about asking a question about what these people may be bringing? I mean, at a time that you have different so-called variants around the world, why is it unfair to ask the question, well, what could they be bringing? Senator Cruz said that, and, you know, the left went jumped all over Senator Cruz. But I think it's a fair question, Bill. I mean, it's a fair question. These people are coming from areas that we don't know. It's only a fair question to check them or ask them or see what they're bringing, Bill.
Well, yes, absolutely. It's a completely fair question. It is also fair to ask why certain people on the southern border just get into the United States, and people who have waited years and gone through the process mm-hmm. legally are treated like outsiders. Who needs mm-hmm. them? That seems to be the attitude. But the fact that they're not required to get vaccinated, or at least not to the best of my knowledge, and that they're being flown all over the United States without any concern. I know that there have been a number of pieces who have expressed concern about the fact that also, in addition to the illegals from coming across the border, that people being brought in from Afghanistan are not really truly vetted, and we don't know how many potential Islamists there are among them. And, of mm-hmm. course, if you say that, you're Islamophobic. You're Islamophobic. But, I mean, to allow this in the kind of chaos that exists is hurtful to this country. There was a poll that I published in Urgent Agenda, reporting a poll that showed that more Americans now believe that Biden is divisive rather than uniting the country, dividing it rather than uniting the country. That is not the result he wanted. And it does, mm-hmm. once again, bring up the issue with all these crazy policies. Who really is running things? Mm-hmm. Now, at times, that is a question that is asked only rhetorically. But when you realize that virtually all the people around Biden are Obama people and original Obama appointees like Susan Rice, you really get the feeling that maybe there is somebody pulling the strings here, because nobody can be this stupid. I mean, doing the things that he has done, creating basically a haven for enemies of the United States. We know that money has been transferred to the Taliban. I think there is a great fear that we're going to transfer more money to Iran to pay them off for something, and that we may even be prepared to give more to the Taliban in the form of ransom to get some people out. I mean, this is just not something that you would expect a truly American administration to do. And I really and they know in this administration that they will be protected by the press. And that is one of the most dangerous things I've seen since my years of viewing politics.
Yeah. Well, they are being protected. I agree with you. And you know, you see that in the coverage. But the events are getting to a point where they can no longer be protected. Because people can see it with their own eyes. I mean, what's happening on the
yes.
border, 14,000 people under a bridge. I mean, even the strongest of Democrat has to say, what the heck is going on there? And then, of course, the situation with gasoline prices and all of that, that has to be hurting a lot. So they're trying their best to protect them, but it seems like events are happening that – What worries me most is, again, going back to my example of September 1979, is that President Biden looks completely overwhelmed. That, you know, if you were to say, okay, what's the plan to get out of this? They don't have any. I mean, it's like, and if they do, they're not telling us. Because I don't, I mean, how are they going to fix the problem on the border? Nobody knows. Look, I'm an immigrant. Yeah. I came to the U.S. legally. And I certainly, I'm very sympathetic to anybody who wants to come to the United States. But it has to be done orderly. 14,000
right.
people under a bridge is not the way I think it should happen. And the other thing, Bill, that I wanted to say, how did 14,000 people from the island of Haiti, which is 1,000 miles, I think, east of Mexico, how did they get to the U.S. border? I mean, I'm not familiar with any – I mean, they don't have any flights that go every day from Port-au-Prince to Laredo, Mexico, that I know of. Do you know of any flights that go every day, Bill, from Port-au-Prince to North Mexico? I don't know of any.
Not to the best of my knowledge, I don't know what airline it would be. I mean, you know, Lenin Airlines. Everybody
right.
is welcome. You know, yeah, and everybody can fly the plane. Everybody gets a chance.
Soros Aircraft. How about Soros Aircraft?
That's right. Yes, absolutely. You can have that. But I was asking myself the same question. Thousands from Haiti suddenly turn up. Somebody said, was it Biden? I don't know if it was Biden. Said, well, they're welcome here. I don't know if it was Biden. But all of a sudden, they're here. And mm-hmm. you've got to believe that in some way this is organized, and it is organized to bring as many illegals into the country as possible to make sure the Democratic Party never loses an election. And they could succeed at this. They really could succeed at this. They don't have the country with them, but they've learned you can get away with it.
Yeah.
No,
you're right. I mean, they are getting away with it. I mean, they've brought in 1 million people into the country now. A lot of those people are supposed to be waiting for a judge to look at their case, but I'll be anxious to see how many they can find when the judge finally sets the court date, Bill. In the past, they've not been able to find many of them after they get in.
No.
And that's
no, and I'd imagine that will be the case this time. You know, you mentioned California a couple of minutes ago. Mm-hmm. We should mention the fact that while the governor of California, Gavin Newsom, easily defeated the recall, that the analysis of votes in California did tend to show some real problems for the Democratic Party.
Mm-hmm.
For example, you've brought this up before, the weakening of Hispanic support for the party is
mm-hmm.
now evident. It's now evident all over the country. And I had something about that also in Urgent Agenda, the weakening of Asian American support.
Mm-hmm.
And I think these things are going to have a profound effect on the Democratic Party down the line. The theoreticians said, well, as soon as we become a majority-minority country, the Democrats will just stay in power forever. But they were assuming that all minorities think alike and vote alike, and that's not
right.
true. As,
no,
as,
not true
as
at all.
The
in
year,
fact,
oh, yeah.
No, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Because I was going to say that I was going to go into talking a little bit about Texas now. There's some talk about Beto O'Rourke running for governor in 2022. He hasn't declared yet, but, you know, there's a story in the paper today saying that he's looking to run. And I think, you know, I will tell you, I think the Democrats are going to be a little surprised if they're counting on Hispanic votes to put him over the top, especially against Abbott, who is not, you know, he's pretty popular, I think, with Hispanics. He certainly has good numbers with him. Because I don't see Beto as the man who's going to save the Democrat Party here in Texas. They need something. They really need an anti-Beto. That's what they really need if they want to be saved, Bill.
Yes, that's absolutely true. The people who are stepping forward to save the world are not the people who represent their constituents.
Well, no. I mean, you have a man, Beto O'Rourke, who, when he ran for president, really took a lot of positions that are going to be very difficult in Texas, particularly over gun control. And I just cannot see Texas electing a man who wants to confiscate guns, because that's going to be the ad they're going to run over and over and over again about him saying that. Now, again, I never assume victory until the last out is made, because politics, like baseball, strange things can happen. But
oh, very.
I don't think Beto is the answer. He hasn't officially announced yet, but it looks like he is. But I just don't think he's the answer to this. One thing about California, Bill, that I also heard you mention California, is that what happened out there was that a lot of Republicans apparently stayed home. Because
yes.
The last time President Trump got 6 million votes out there, and this time only 3 million voted, or apparently half of the people voted in the recall. So I don't know what happened, whether it was a choice of candidates. I don't know what happened.
I think that
was it. Yeah, maybe the Democrats are reading too much into this. I mean, when you have a Democrat governor who has to spend $75 million to defend his position, somebody used the analogy of the governor of Alabama having to defend $75 million to run against a bunch of Democrats, Bill.
Yes, yes. Well, I think that what you said a few minutes ago was absolutely correct. It was the choice of candidates. You can't beat somebody with nobody. It's an old cliche in politics. And Larry Elder is a nice guy. He's a good talk show host. But I don't think that he came off as a potential governor. You know, he doesn't have either the experience or the size. Now, you can say, well, Arnold Schwarzenegger became governor after a recall early in this century. But Arnold was a particular personality. You know, he, first of all, had a giant personality, and he had kind of this image of manliness and bigness. Larry Elder just didn't make it as a candidate, and I think many people felt, well, you know, so we'll recall Newsom, and we'll get this guy. You know, what does that mean? And there was just not enough stimulus to come out and vote. You've got to have a strong candidate. The Republican Party on its own cannot win because structurally it's weak. It always was weak. They have to have that Reagan or somebody in that category, or a Trump, even though Trump was both loved and hated at the same time. And I think that I expected better from the California recall. I think the division of votes when they at least at the end of election night was pretty much the same division as the state politically, 2-1. Democrat,
right.
And the Republicans could not, or the recall people could not make too many inroads. I agree with you. I would not, if I were a Democrat, put too much into it. I still think it will be very difficult for the Republicans to win California in a presidential election because they seem to have almost unlimited support in some communities. However, strange things and miraculous things have happened. The state is in terrible condition. I don't know how anybody can deny that. And it may very well get worse by the time next year and then the presidential election come around.
Right, that's right. It seems like the Newsom campaign was, keep me in office, otherwise you'll get Trump. That
yes,
seems
that
to have been his message. And maybe that worked in the recall, but I don't know.
It probably did. And the next big race coming up, and one that is actually much more important than the California recall, is the governor's race in Virginia, which is decided this year. I have no idea why they have an off-year governorship. But Virginia is a state that used to be solidly conservative. It then went purple, and now it's basically a Democratic state. And the former governor, Terry McAuliffe, who had to skip a term because of term limits, can run again this year. He is, and he is leading in the polls. He is leading the Republican candidate in a year that you would think the Republicans would come back to life in Virginia. It can still be won, but don't underestimate the Democratic Party's ability to win elections.
That's right. Well, one interesting thing about that election, they had a debate, and I was looking at some of the polling data, and the RCP average, you know, has it 46-42. That's the average. And I thought it was interesting if McAuliffe, who has all the name recognition in the world, who used to be a former governor, if he's under 50%, you would think they have to be worried about that. Because, you know, he's about as well known as you can be. He's running against an unknown Republican. So I don't know what's going to happen, but I see a lot of issues there that could hurt the Democrats. We'll see. Let's wait and see until it gets a little bit closer, which I guess is a couple of months away. But at this stage of the game, for that to be a 4-point race, I would think the Democrats, both sides, have reasons to worry. I mean, maybe the Republican
yes.
support is not as strong as it should be. Maybe the Democrat support is not as strong as it should be. I was expecting the Republican to be doing a lot better because of those school board meetings that have become
I
so famous there.
And McAuliffe is in favor of critical race theory, and
yes.
he's still ahead. Now, maybe
right.
it's because people have not devoted enough attention to the campaign, and maybe the Republican campaign is not bringing this out. Maybe it's one of those gentlemanly campaigns. But also, the Democrats have an absolutely solid lock on Northern Virginia because mm-hmm. so many government workers live there, and they are solidly Democratic. So it's got to be one in the rest of the state, but the Republicans have got to run a dramatic what Nixon used to call a rock'em sock'em campaign, and it has to nail McAuliffe. It has to be directed at McAuliffe. They could pull it out. But if we start having a situation before the 2022 election where Republicans almost win in these special elections, we're going to have a bad situation because the party is going to get discouraged.
Right. No, I agree. This is one that Republicans should make every effort to win. And I have no idea how it's going to go, but it's close. Let's just say that. So it's going to be a turnout election probably. Well,
yes.
let's talk a little bit, Bill, about there's a new book out that I haven't read. I don't know if anybody has actually read the book, but it talks about General Milley and apparently a phone call that he made to China. My reaction from the very beginning was that I want to see the book. I want to see what he actually said. You know, I want to see the text of the phone call. Because we've seen this movie before where Bob Woodward promotes
oh, yes.
a book, and then after the book, after you know millions of people spend $25 to buy the book, they find out that it really isn't what they thought it was. So I want to wait for the actual transcript, and then he's either going to be guilty of treason or insubordination, or the whole thing may be much to do about nothing, Bill.
Well, we know that the phone calls were made, and we're told by even conservative commentators like Jack Keane, former general, who comments on Fox, that there was really nothing inappropriate about that we talked to the Chinese all the time, and that I agree with. I mean, even during the Cold War, they would talk to their Russian counterparts. The issue is not the idea that the phone call was made. The issue was what was said. That's the key here. The claim is, in some circles, that he assured the Chinese that if we were going to attack China, he would give them a heads up, which, of course, would be treasonable. I mean, obviously, I don't know if that can be proved. I think he has denied it. I think that he has probably sufficient support in the military to survive this. But the idea that he may have gone behind the president's back and made phone calls and made commitments that he wasn't permitted to make as a military officer, that has to be examined. It's a serious – the charges against him are serious. And even though they're only in the press, there are no legal charges against him. And it is – and once again, we have a failure by the press, which fails almost as a matter of routine these days. You would have to go back to the firing of Douglas MacArthur in 1951 to find a similar situation where a general kind of went around a president or tried to defeat a president's policies and had to be fired because of it. However, I haven't heard that mentioned once because I doubt very much if most of the people in journalism today have ever heard of Douglas MacArthur or the United States for that matter. I mean, you know, judging by the way they report the news. But the charges, the informal charges, the concerns are serious and really do warrant a major investigation.
No, I agree with that. I think it should be investigated, but we should at least know what he said or how he
yes.
said. But the one conversation that worries me that hasn't gotten a lot of publicity, but apparently it's in the book, is the conversation that he had with Speaker Pelosi where
– yes.
They're talking about Trump being crazy and starting a war. I didn't know that generals would have conversations like that with the Speaker of the House. That bothers me that the hatred of Trump drives people to do so many stupid things, Bill.
Yes, and there is absolutely no evidence whatever that he would start a war. In fact, quite the
yeah.
opposite. He came into office promising to end wars. And as he said himself just a couple of days ago, he said, I never contemplated attacking China. Mm-hmm. So now it could be, once again, we have to see transcripts if they're available. It could be that it was a one-way conversation where Pelosi was making these comments and the general was kind of saying, mm-hmm, yeah, you know, the way people do when they don't mm-hmm. necessarily agree, but they have to just shut up and let her do her talking. But if he was agreeing with her and was plotting behind the president's back, then it becomes serious.
Yes, it does. And the whole thing is just confusing. And, of course, once again, all of this comes out in a book based on anonymous sources and a book who I think the biggest objective of all of this is selling books. And it just worries me that, you know, that this is how we're doing our politics, Bill. Maybe it happened like this before. Maybe I'm not trying to be naive, but we've seen a lot of this under Trump, all these books written about Trump based on anonymous sources, and they don't turn out to be quite that way after people read the book, Bill.
Well, that's absolutely true, and because of the 24-hour news cycle, the journalists, which is probably an exaggerated word, have to fill it with something. And they will fill it with a lot of commentary about things they know nothing about, things they haven't actually witnessed, speculative journalism, and that's what we're getting. But the hope in the Democratic Party is that all this will go away by election time in 2022. That may happen. But the fact of the matter is that the economy is also not doing anywhere near as well as the Democrats mm-hmm. hoped. Inflation is beginning to soar, and that's not going to go away. That may be with us. And the Republicans, if they're smart, and here again we have questions, we could very well go back to Ronald Reagan's line, are you better off than you were 3 years ago? And the answer is going to be no. The answer is going to be no.
Well, the polling data clearly shows that. I mean, people are not happy with where things are.
They're not happy at all, and we're going to have a very, very exciting political year, and I have no doubt that it's going to be vicious. But once again, we have to be reminded that the time between now and the 2022 elections is 14 months. That is 150 lifetimes in politics, and we have in the White House a frail man. You don't know what could happen by 2022. You really don't.
That's right. Yeah, he really does not look good, and I don't say that with any disrespect. I'm just looking at the man, and he does not look very good. Unfortunately, I say unfortunately because he is the president of the United States. That's one thing you don't want in the presidency is, you know, is a man looking as weak physically as he looks. Let's talk a little bit. One last topic here I wanted to get into. Well, a couple of quick things I wanted to talk about is it looks like the Democrats are not going to be able to do what they wanted to do through reconciliation. They wanted to put immigration and everything in the kitchen sink in the reconciliation bill, and that's not going to happen. We're also having some hearing that Senator Manchin of West Virginia is not exactly on board with spending $3.5 trillion. So the question I have is why don't the Democrats just sign the bill or pass the bill that already passed the Senate and give President Biden a victory bill? I mean, why argue about all this additional spending that they know will not pass? I don't get that, Bill.
Well, they have a left-wing militant caucus in part of the party that is absolutely fanatical. They don't care what the leaders of the party think. They don't care even what most Democrats think. They are in power. You have this lunatic from Missouri, Congresswoman Cori Bush. You have AOC, who shows up at the Met Gala in New York in a gown worth thousands of dollars. And because she writes on it, attacks the rich, she's thinking nobody's going to notice that she showed up in a gown worth thousands of dollars. I mean, it's completely ridiculous. That faction has power way beyond its numbers, way beyond its numbers. The people are mm-hmm. afraid of them. They're afraid of being called racists and this and that. And they are, in a way, the new McCarthyites, and they have a certain amount of power. And I do believe that the party is bending to their will a little too much.
In fact, there's a story And you've mentioned this before. There's a story that this is what's driving Senator Schumer so far to the left, because he's very concerned that there's going to be a challenge. And given what we've seen in New York already in House races, you know, somebody from the left could actually defeat Schumer for the U.S. Senate in the primary. I mean.
That's true. There is a, you know, if AOC ran against Schumer, she would have a chance of winning. I don't know how big a chance, because I cannot imagine any of the party leaders supporting her. They would resent her, and I cannot imagine the governor supporting her. She would be supported by a large number of not only certain, some minority votes, but more important, the big left-wing white vote in New York City. There's this guilt-ridden group of people in New York City who feel shameful every time they walk on a concrete sidewalk. You know, they don't have concrete sidewalks all over the world, do they? I have to think of my privilege. You know,
right.
I mean, you get that. That's how she gets elected. But I don't know what the polls would show. I think if a poll were taken now in New York State, she would be very far behind. But come Election Day, she will have the support probably of the New York Times and of all of the race-baiting politicians. And you never know how that turns out. She could overtake and the Senate Majority Leader. It would be suicide for New York State, I mean, because we'd lose all our seniority in the Senate. But if she got to the Senate, she could demand to become Majority Leader. And, you know, you never know.
You never know. It's not the first time the Democrats have lost a majority leader in a campaign. I think back in 2002, when it was a 50-50 Senate, the fellow from South Dakota or North Dakota, I can't think of his name right now, who was the majority leader, went down.
Daschle.
Yeah, Daschle. He went down. One quick point here, Bill, before we go. I don't know how important this is, or maybe it is very important. I'd like to hear your thoughts. The French are suddenly not very happy with the United States, and they've recalled the ambassador. I mean, this is pretty interesting. I've never seen anything like this before, Bill.
Well, they feel that they were knifed in the back, and that the United States, they had made a deal worth $1 billion, I think, with Australia to supply conventional submarines. The United States moved into that after the deal was made and put together a coalition of countries in the Pacific and then including Australia to break that French deal and to buy nuclear submarines instead. And the French felt that we had betrayed them, that they knew about this, and that we never consulted with them. They claimed they were never told what the United States was doing. And yes, they did recall their ambassador, and they did make a number of snide remarks about Biden and the United States generally. So we now have to patch this up. I don't know how you patch up that kind of a dispute with your oldest ally. I really don't. Because apparently they just don't care in Washington. They really don't. They don't care about countries like France. They're not sufficiently woke. And that I'm afraid is, you know, I have no idea what they're doing. They really are silly. Blinken is the Secretary of State. He's not a stupid man, but so far I think is either taking orders he shouldn't be taking. He ought to resign, or handling things badly. He is very much a creation of Barack Obama.
Yeah.
And again, you wonder who really is pulling the strings.
Yeah, but it's interesting to me, Bill. One last point here before we go. You mentioned Blinken. He was one. I remember back when the new cabinet was being put together that you and many people thought Blinken was a good choice, or about as good as we were going to get. And it's unfortunate because I think Blinken is destroying his career in a sense. But I agree with you. I think he's being told what to do. But he's destroying his career, I mean, because he was not supposed to be I had better expectations for Blinken, and I wouldn't be surprised if he resigns pretty soon, because he doesn't look good, Bill.
No, no, and this is not going to end well. I mean, I think that the left wing of the Democratic Party is just getting started in foreign policy. I think they want him out, and they mm-hmm. want to replace him with somebody more like John Kerry. I mean, I think
yeah.
again, I think it's Obama who may be calling the shots, and they would or a Bernie Sanders. Who might suddenly express interest in the role. But
yeah.
Again, we don't know where the power center is, and we don't know if the vice president has an opinion on it, or whether she – and you can reach her almost at any football game. All you do is
right.
is go to the better seats, she'll be there. So
right.
very confusing.
Go to the expensive seats, and she'll be there watching the game, yeah.
She will be there, and you can ask her there. But you have a situation where there is a great loss of confidence in the United States government. If this were a parliamentary democracy, such as Britain, it is quite possible that Biden would lose a vote of confidence, and
absolutely.
He would have to to leave office.
You're exactly right about that. In fact, speaking of elections, there's one in Canada today, appears to be close to call.
Yes.
Probably not the way that Prime Minister Trudeau had planned it, since he called for the election. But we may have an election to talk about next week up in Canada, because it's too close to
That's
call,
right.
as I see it right now. Well, Bill, thanks as always for your time, and keep up the great work at Urgent Agenda. And we'll check it every day and see what's happening, and read as well your commentaries on the different things that you write about there. Thank you for your time. Have a great week. And if you see Al Gore, tell him I didn't buy his book, because
okay.
I think he's got a very bad record of predictions, Bill.
He will give you a free copy.
Well, make sure if it's free, make sure he signs it then, Bill.
He'll sign it. Yes, he will sign it, and he will. It'll be worth something someday, because he is going to sign it, and also he's getting Noah from the Ark to sign it.
That's it.
And saying, this is what happens when you don't listen to Al Gore.
That's it. Yeah, and Noah is on board, no question about it.
That's right.
All right, Bill, have a great week, and thank you for your time as always.
My pleasure, Sylvia.
All right, we'll talk to you later. Our good friend, Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda, and these shows go fast, don't they? Man, they go very fast. So much to talk about. Have a wonderful week, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we'll talk to you later.